Yeah, we'll be here too.
Is August 14, 2017, the time is now approximately 1:03 PM. I will call to order the quarterly meeting of the Cala Police Officers Retirement System Board of Trustees. For purposes of record, my name is Michael Summer. I'm currently the chairman of the plan, and we'll start to my right.
Steve Tuppy, secretary.
Doug Shively, board member.
Brian Creedle, board member.
Cindy Kelly, city representative.
Larry Cole, investment consultant.
Alicia Gaper, pension manager.
Mindy Stewart, board member.
Dale Adams, plan administrator.
Jessica Power, pension special.
And our members of the public?
Brian Sparverson.
Hillary Dunn.
Bob Bray. Thank you. All right, I guess the first order of business is to select a chairman and secretary and a fifth member.
Actually, it's to confirm the results of the...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
These glasses didn't help.
No. I'm getting ahead of myself.
You would have done okay without going together.
We did the normal nomination for candidates for Mike's position. Mike's been on the board 6 years and...
2009, I think.
Okay. His position came up for election this year, and we had two nominations, both of which were for Mike. And he has accepted the nomination, so due to that fact, Mike is re-elected to the board without any opposition. So we just need a motion to confirm that and for him to be re-elected to the board. So...
I second.
Glenn called it up because it's about me.
Sorry.
We'll go ahead and call the vote. The election, re-election of Mike Summer to the board. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And so it passes.
Now you...
Yeah, now we'll select the chairman, the secretary, and a fifth member.
How does that work? Does somebody just raise their hand and say, I want to be chairman?
I think Mindy expressed an interest in it one day last week.
Normally, historically, since I've been on the board, the chairman and secretary were the elected serving police officers.
Right.
Yeah,
you just flip-flop them back.
And then the city has two appointees, and then we appoint the fifth, which has been, since I've been on the board. Doug,
we'd like to maintain tradition, at least for the chairman and the secretary.
That's what everybody...
That's how it's always been. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's kind of how it's always been.
Well, Brian and Mindy are fighting for it.
Well, I picked up that phone.
We cleared that.
I think I said one more of this.
two motions, right? One for the chairman, secretary, one for the fifth member, correct?
Yeah.
All right, so...
Do y'all have a preference on one or the other, secretary or chairman?
Really doesn't make a difference to me. I mean, I'm fine staying chairman or fine being secretary. I've been both.
I'll make a motion that Mike be the chairman of the board.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now a motion for the secretary.
The motion.
No, I think... Did you move for both?
No. I thought we'd do one at a time this year.
Okay.
I'll make the second motion that Steve be the secretary.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, now the fifth member. I guess the question is, are you still interested in serving?
Yes, I'll do another term.
Nobody else has expressed any interest to me. Has anybody else expressed any interest to anybody?
No.
Make a motion that Doug be selected as the fifth member of the board.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Nobody.
Then I'll take another letter to council for Mike.
And for Doug.
And Doug.
Public input and comment. Anybody like to speak?
Well, we're here for a purpose. Do you want us to speak about that purpose at this point?
Sure.
Several of the retirees have gotten together at the last luncheon, and we had spoken to them also. We were here to request a raise, I guess, for the retirees that are retired now.
That chime in?
Really?
And I found out after I started doing some work on something that some of our retirees may be coming, but it was my intention today to present to the board that we try to do something on this topic itself. So I guess my question will be, is this the proper time to kind of talk about it, or do we want to put it in at a different time? I don't know if the public, these guys that are sitting here, have a proposal in mind other than to say a raise. I don't know if you've done anything.
No, we have not done anything.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, as the city's liaison, my question is, what does that mean? What is that, you know, what are you specifically looking for? You know, do you want a COLA? Do you want a percentage? Do you want a one time? I mean.
I would say we want at least a percentage. There has not been one in somebody bring at least 10 years old has a one time where we got a check.
Right. Well, the pension ordinance as written doesn't, the police plan doesn't have a COLA provision. So it's, you know, it's just the way the plan is designed.
And I don't know. I said, I thought y'all were kind of more, we're talking about maybe a COLA, if that's.
Well, there's several.
They all don't have any idea what.
Right. Our plan, like Cindy said, unlike FRS that has a built-in 40% raise each year, our plan does not have that because it's quite costly. You remember probably from back when you were on the court fans. It was looked at way back when, but it's very costly to provide that. And there's several ways that can go. You can have a one-time ad hoc raise where you get a percentage raise or a dollar figure type of a raise, or you can have an automatic COLA that is expensive. You can have a dollar figure, like if you've got, just off the top of my head, 100 retirees and you have a $100,000 pool of money, then you could give each one of them, you know, that equivalent amount of a raise, you know, a $1,000 raise. Or the last one that we did was a $5 per month supplement for each full-year accredited service. And that was the one that was given in 2007. We actually had two of those, and those are the ones that the city council, they did away with those in November 2015, that extra $10 supplement for that amount.
Yeah, that was a bargaining issue.
They've done away with that moving forward. Anybody who earned it still has it, but anybody going forward no longer earns that unless you were grandfathered in. So there's a number of ways that it could go. I know Steve has some ideas. I got some information from Doug Lowe, and it was brought up when Doug was at a meeting a few months ago. And there's a number of ways that it could go. And I don't know if we want to have this as an agenda item, if we want to discuss it here amongst us, or how we want to proceed. But
I have to admit, just to add to the discussion, the way that I was looking to present this was just taking a one-time lump sum, and determining a way to divide that money up among the retirees itself, knowing that there's a couple of different, what I'll call groups or classifications of retirees. I think the gentlemen that you guys that are here are part of the
old plan. I'm not sure. Bob,
you're not. I'm the first one out of it.
You were the first one. I mean, you guys were part of the old plan.
I was on the one where we paid in every single paycheck. We put a chunk into the pension.
Well, you got a 3% contribution back then.
So, you know, just to play numbers, as I said, I just took $200,000 and I just took it in three different ways to divide it up. One way was just to evenly divide it out amongst the 85 retirees that are in the system itself. I think there's 85. The second option was just to take it and dividing it up, dependent upon how much money they were receiving from the pension per month. So if you were under $3,000 per month, you were receiving a larger amount of that check. And it broke up between $3,000 and $5,000 and then over $5,000. The option number three was something that certainly factored in. I looked at, there were 15 members that are part of the old retirement system that are still in the pension system, and two of them are here today. And again, it was dividing it up based on some different classifications, one being those 15 members. And then the next bracket was looking at if you were bringing home less than $4,000 per month, or four to six, or over six, and dividing the money up. It was basically looking at it as a one-time contribution to those members from the pension itself. And that was just some thoughts that I had about it. The numbers that I brought here, the $200,000, it's just a number that I pulled out of my head and then just started working the math off of that. Certainly, I think if this is something to be considered, there's some discussion that needs to be had about the different classifications that I'm talking about. There's people that are on disability. There are people that are part of the states. There are 15 that are part of the old system that, if you look at it, they were receiving very, very little after 25, 30 years of service with the city itself. And certainly option number three that I kind of presented there factored that in for those individuals and tried to factor in those individuals that were receiving less money to potentially receive a little bit more money than those individuals that were receiving $5,000 and $6,000 per month. I don't think there was as much of a need to help those individuals as there was some of the older members of our pension. So my purpose was to just kind of bring this today just to facilitate some discussion as to what maybe we could do or what the board would be willing to do, if anything.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things to consider. One, you know, the ordinance doesn't provide for a COLA raise. So no matter what we do, it's got to go through City Council for approval. Funding, you know, how are you going to pay for it?
Does it come out of the pension itself? Well, I mean, we have, the funds are here within the pension itself.
Well, there are no COLA funds in the pension, so you're underfunded because your plan is at 78%, so you're not, so you increase the unfunded liability by anything that you do unless you write a check to pay for this.
Correct.
So
it would come out of the $66 million value that we have at the fund.
Right, but the plan itself doesn't have the funds to cover it, from an actuarial standpoint. The plan's underfunded, so there's no excess funds, so it doesn't have extra funds. Like, the fire plan has excess funds in their plan. That's how they cover theirs. You guys don't have the same setup, just because of how you're set up. But, I mean, small amounts, so it's kind of a mess.
That's what we used to fund the last one, Dale, was excess?
You may have increased your unfunded liabilities from how you did it.
Probably. Back then is also when our plan went from 5% contribution to an 8% contribution that was only supposed to last for 1 year. But then that, we know what happened with that.
Right.
That's when Sizzler made that right here.
Yeah.
Said it's only for a year, but
right.
That was 13, 14 years ago, and it still had it.
Right. And then there, you know, from the union perspective, you know, this is a benefit, so you have to impact bargain.
You believe we have to benefit us when we give our membership section?
Well, I'm saying legally, your pension is a benefit. Any change to it under union rules, we have to impact bargain.
Would a one-time option be a change, or is it a one-time gift?
Well,
I don't consider that a change.
Right, either way, you don't allow for it in the ordinance now, so it is a change. So so we can just say, open negotiations.
It doesn't have to go to negotiations and bargaining, it's just something that you have to sign off.
You know, like, how we do the letters, the MOU letters, yes, that's what I mean, it's an impact item.
Okay.
Because you're...
The actuary has to give us an impact statement.
Right, you have to have an impact statement.
Doug said a one-time lump sum stipend would be the least expensive, and would be less than 1% of payroll. If you went as much as a 10% stipend, then you're looking at 1% to 2% of payroll to fund that.
Right.
Of whatever our police payroll is. And of course, what you've got here is neither of those, but it's kind of a combination.
Certainly the one thing, I know they were talking about a COLA and everything else, certainly, as I thought about that, the one thing that concerns me, that's a permanent cost to the pension itself.
Right.
Now, I look as little as back as 5 years ago, the value of the pension was only at 43 million. And that's obviously coming out of the stock market, some difficult times then. You know, and it's cyclical, it's going to come back again. And I do believe the pension will probably drop back in value again potentially because of that. So that's what, for me personally, cautions me to sit here and say, adding something that is a continuous thing as we move forward, that worries me a little bit. The one-time cost thing doesn't worry me as much, and we're thinking it would not tax the plan itself all that much.
Right, it would be a de minimis impact to the plan, definitely. I'm just talking logistically, there's just certain things that we...
Legalities, what we've got to get through to do it.
Yes, to make sure we do it all, you know.
Back when we were discussing the whole getting rid of the two stipends, that was the argument, it was actuarially tenuous, I guess would be the word for it, and burdensome to the plan. A one-time, I agree that a one-time would be probably the way to go, where it would be less of an actuarial burden on the plan, but I'm not object to getting a retiree something. These guys certainly put in their time and their effort, and those that are under the old plan, I don't know how they did it, to be honest with you.
Well, about cost of living, a regular cost of living, you know, it's hard for them to make ends meet when the pension stays the same over 15, 20 years. So
I can say our insurance is continuing to go up every single year.
Yeah.
And I know the last time I can remember getting one of the two, I guess, raises I've had, the last time was that when the insurance went up a whole bunch, and the cost of living and the payment that they gave us, the extra money, didn't even cover the amount the insurance went up.
Right.
And it was nice, it helped, and we appreciated it, but it didn't even cover what the insurance went up.
And you guys don't have a proposal, you said, so a one-time, so whatever the state council decides they want to do, you guys are fine.
How does that work with city council? Is that something where somebody from the pension board itself becomes before council to...
No, that's what my role is. I mean, technically, your guys' role is to administer the plan as written.
Okay.
You know, sometimes throughout the years, my understanding, we've got all sideways on that, and... You know, proposals come from any which way. So it's fine for the retirees to ask you guys, but as a liaison and the city, the owner of the pension plan, council would, you know, determine. But if you guys have proposals, I'll write them up, I'll present them to council, we'll go through them. Like Dale said, we have to present the impact statement, get the union to sign off on letters saying, yeah, we're good with, you know, this happening. You know, we don't have any objection to it. So we just want to cross our... You know, legality to make sure that we're not following anybody's rights, you know, as far as bargaining goes.
What has always happened in the past, any proposal for any type of an increase has always been brought to the board, and the board, or even a change in benefits has been brought to the board, and the board has sought legal advice on what needs to be done to move forward with that, and then get a general idea from the actuary, and then it was come up with a proposal of which route we wanted to go, or several options like what you've done here, Steve, and then have the actuary actually, you know, authorize him to do a study. and to cost it out and say, if we did option one, it's going to cost so much, if we did option two, so much, option three, so much, and so on.
Because it's easy to present council like a package that says, we've already done all the work. And this is, you know, hey, here's what you want to do. So that's the end today, that, you know, finding this issue. Even if it impacts the plan, it impacts councils, how much they have to put in the next year and so. But it is easy to have it all in the pretty package and let them force it. Because if there is an ordinance changing, like if you guys were looking to do more than just a one time, for a one time, I don't imagine we need more than change, we were just trying to understand if that's what we were doing. If you wanted to have a provision that said, you know, you'll look at it every 3 years, you know, like if you wanted to have some language, we'd have to do an ordinance.
Yeah, I know Lee has told us before, and something we talked about a few weeks ago, if you revisit it too often, then it looks like an automatic.
Right.
And the state then, I mean, our plan is approved by the state because of the type of plan that we are, and we've got state approval, we've got state approval on our annual report that we just received. But if we have, if we look at it too frequently, then they can consider that an automatic that would make us fund for an automatic. We don't really want to do that because our fund can't afford it and the city's not going to fund it.
Right.
But if it's a true ad hoc, that means that you revisit it when you feel you have the funding there to fund it, then you know, it would be an ad hoc, not would be viewed by the state as an automatic.
Well, the fire and the city employees, they don't have a COLA, or how do they handle this when this comes up?
Well, they're different. Fire has a COLA provision in their plan. Now, forever and a day, there wasn't a nickel funded to it until this new change. So they have, and their state contributions, they have actually have excess state contribution money. So it's been accumulating a little pool. It had about 1 point something million, or 2.3 million, or something like that. And they took a million of that, paid down their unfunded liability, and they put the other money and actually funded their COLA provision. Because they had a COLA provision, just unfunded forever. So this past year was the first year they got something. They came up with a formula that said it was earnings, based on earnings of that million. So they got something for the earnings. So it was a small whole thing, but they've had that provision for a long time, and up until this year it didn't have any money to keep to go behind it to fund it, but this was the first year they actually got something from it.
So the police plan didn't have a COLA when it was originally established?
Right, it doesn't have that. Never you guys has. Did the stipends, you never had a COLA. Now the general, oh boy, that's a horse of a whole other color. The general had none, and then in 08, the general got the 3% COLA in perpetuity. So everybody that left under that early retirement program got it, never paid any money in. Everybody after that started to get it. It was part of where the plan went upside down, because it was, a COLA is just really, really expensive to maintain, because you're never paying in enough to support that. So when we did pension reform in 2013 with the general plan, we removed the COLA. So the only people who still get the COLA are those who retired under the old system, those who were within 5 years of retirement at the time in 2013, and anyone else in their form, there's no COLA for them.
Assuming we had the funds for the COLA, the excess funds, we couldn't, since it wasn't written originally, we couldn't even do it if we wanted to. Is that
right? You still have the ordinance change because you don't provide for it.
Well, and now if we did have the excess funds, you'd have to look at the new law first before you could even think about that with the whole share plan
right.
thing, because that was something else, and the state completely didn't consider a retiree ever in that, any of that.
So yes, each of the three plans has handled it. And of course, all general city employees, that started after October 1, 2013, don't have any pension at all. There's no pension plan offered to employees anymore. It's gone for general employees. So now everyone's in a 401 style. So there's no COLA, there's no pension, there's no nothing. The last 40 years. On the side.
So the first thing would have to be deciding on a firm pot of money. I think that's what members of the city used to refer to it as, the pots of money.
Or what your methodology want to be, because, you know, when Foster costs it out, they need to know what they're going to cost out.
Well, I definitely like the idea of the
last two options Steve has were, you know, the members have been retired the longest and making the least, get a little more money. I mean, something along those lines, I think would be a lot fairer.
And that's often how it's done. And often when you get a raise, it excludes people who have retired recently. You know, normally somebody has to be retired a minimum period of time before they're included in it. So somebody, a drop retiree who's done 5 years of the drop, they're technically retired already for 5 years. But somebody who just simply retired and within that year or whatever period of time would not be included in it.
I would exclude drop. I mean, personally, I mean, you know, I don't have a dog in tight other than a right check. I would exclude drop. People who are in the drop.
And generally, you have to have been gone for 1 year from October in order to get it.
Yeah.
So I would say that definitely would need to be in there.
And when I thought about this, my concern wasn't really at all with the recent retirees. I mean, you look at what they're making per month. That wasn't what made me think about this. Mm-hmm. It was really the people that, like these gentlemen behind us, have been here for a long time.
Our group's going to get smaller every year, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Let me ask a question. Has anything similar to this been limited by, say, age? Retirees that you know of, retirees over a certain age, over a certain number of years?
There's something about that that you just can't do.
Because you have retirees who are eligible by years of service, so, you know.
Or by number of years of retirement.
You might be 45, but you got shot. I mean, I wouldn't want to exclude you because now you're.
Well, and that's something we're going to have to consider because there are X amount of disability members that are part of our pension, and we'll have to decide, are they included in this one-time stipend as well? That was something that is going to have to be discussed.
Beneficiaries who are joint survivor.
When we enacted it, when the board enacted the last one, it included everybody who was retired, including disability retirees and drop participants, but it excluded terminated vested. So if you've got, we've got a number of people who've terminated who are vested and they will draw a future benefit down the road. In fact, we've got a couple who are going to start drawing a benefit this year that have been gone, Heisler and Barry Shrine.
Are they allowed to retire or are they terminated? I don't think being
terminated vested is what they
were. What's that mean?
That means you don't work here any longer, but you're a vested member of the pension plan.
Right,
you
have your 10%.
That you are going to draw a future benefit from the pension.
Now.
Jack Cease when he left, and
right.
Dina Cole and Darley, and they weren't terminated. They weren't fired from their job. They're terminated.
It's not
going to. And means they're no longer employed.
They left their money in the plan. They didn't draw their money.
And they're going to draw their money at a future date.
I mean, the only reason I should exclude drop is because you're still collecting a paycheck. And any raises or anything given by the city, you're getting those. So, and the city is, you know.
And they're double tapping there.
Right. You know, and you are, you know, in the police contract, there are raises slated. So you then get that plus this. And I think that would leave you, I mean, there's not a lot of drop. I mean, there's only a couple of them. But that would just leave you a little bit more to distribute among the, you know, the retirees who are more, you know, at need.
Can we get Lee to get us, what, some proposals like this for like a long time that he's worked out with other plans? Or.
Oh yeah, I'm sure we can.
In a timely manner.
Well, if not from Lee.
Foster may be able to get us.
Doug Rose and the old dealer provide it to us.
Because right. He's probably costed out some stuff for people, and he might tell us what he's costing.
Because when it was brought up at the earlier meeting, February meeting or whatever it was, and Doug just said it would basically be, you know, less than 2%. I mean, they do this work for a lot of clients, and I'm sure they've got some ideas on the way to go. And Doug had said some of the same things that I've said, that you can, you exclude recent retirees because they've just started drawing. It's a legal question from the attorney on whether you can exclude drop participants.
Well, that's
technically they're retired. I think if somebody entered the drop in the last year, they should be excluded, but if they've entered the drop prior to that, they should probably be included, because technically they're retired. We included drop participants the last time, and when the COLA was given, we included drop. Because one time we had a 2% COLA, an actual COLA that was granted.
Because
drop, they're technically retired. And I think if you excluded them, you'd have a, you'd have room for a complaint there.
You see, that's the problem.
We can't say like retired drawing benefits?
That's kind of the problem having meetings with, you know, with.
Well, we determine, we could give us that answer. We can call Scott, he's available.
Dale, we can't say like retired drawing benefits, wouldn't that exclude the drop people, or you think we'd get in trouble for that?
No, I think.
Because retired drawing benefits, the drop people aren't retiring benefits.
And then you end the whole.
Well, what we did before in our ordinance is we stated it included all retirees, including drop participants and disability retirees, but it excluded, because you've also, in addition to disabilities, you've got beneficiaries.
Correct.
We've got a number of beneficiaries who are receiving benefits. And we've got 15 of those. And I noticed one thing you had on here excluding, I don't think you had minus mayor and Kaya, I don't know.
And that had to do, well, mayor was, that's Roxanne Mayor. It's almost like the way you had it listed on there, she's listed on there because she's getting half of Chaz's.
Right.
Pension.
Right.
Chaz gets half of it, and then she's listed on there as getting the other half.
Right.
So I have to admit, I wasn't interested in giving Roxanne Mayor. I'll give it to Chaz, but I don't want to give it to the ex-wife, but that's just.
Yeah.
I know, I'm sorry. I apologize for my comments.
Well.
Just because I'm the ex-wife.
I've got one too, so I understand, but. But, and I can't remember what Kaya was. I don't, I'd have to look back at the papers.
Yeah, Kaya is a beneficiary being paid to the estate. Kaya is actually not receiving anything under the retirees now, it's under the beneficiary. His name's still listed on here, but it's under the beneficiary. And that's a terminal payment, that's going to actually end at some point in time, I don't know.
Is it?
When, because it was a 10-year guarantee from when he started age 65 benefits. And I don't know how old he was when he passed away, I recall.
Really like to know all the rules, so we can come up with.
But there is going to be a termination on Kaya's, and.
So is that where we're at, you think, Mike, is we got to get the ground rules?
I think we got to have all the ground rules to be able to say that, you know, just for sake of argument, one of these plans works. And then also decide on, you know, a hard dollar number at the same time, which then will need the impact to see if it's doable. But I mean, we're sitting here spitballing a lot of ideas, yeah, and we don't have the answers to the questions that we need.
Is it easiest for one board member to kind of get some of these answers and then come back with some proposals at the next meeting again?
Either
maybe we can iron this out?
Either one of us, one of the board members, or Dale.
Well, you've done quite a lot of work on this, Steve. If you wanted to talk to Doug, or you and I talk to him.
I think I'd like to have you with me.
At a conference call, we could talk to Doug and kind of bounce some things off and get his ideas. Cause, I mean, they're the experts on this and the experts in the funding. But I think it's something that definitely should be pursued. Keeping in mind that it's only a recommendation from this board, and the plan would have to pay Doug's expenses in terms of determining what the costs are. And then it's entirely up to city council whether they'll go for it or not.
Yeah, I mean, we could send this to Doug, let him see if this is like a doable or like an example, or yeah, if he's got something along those lines.
Yeah. Because what I talked to Doug about before was just a lump sum payment or possibly a small across the board monthly increase of 3 to 4%, and doing something like that, he says, going to be the most costly because it's an ongoing thing as opposed to a one-time stipend. Some Some pension plans do what's called a 13th check. When the funds are available, they issue everybody a 13th check. They don't give them a raise, but they just get an extra payment. The downside of that is those who are in the higher pay ranges receive a much larger 13th check than those in the lower ones, like you guys who've been retired for a while. So, where Ward Foster at one time said the fairest way for retirees is to give everybody an equitable amount, you know.
It'll minimize the argument. Certainly, you come up with option three, there are some people that are going to sit there and bellyache and complain about it.
There's going to be somebody who's going to fuss no matter what.
The only way to minimize it is just an across the board, but I'm willing to look at option three and become more creative, because I personally, I have looked at those 15 that are on the list that are, you know, they're getting so little right now for being with the agency. And I think, as Ellery correctly said, they're not going to be here forever. So,
and
while we're here presently, let's take care of it.
And the costs are going up. The city insurance is going up.
Correct.
All your other costs are going up. And,
yeah.
And, all right. Why don't Steve and I use this kind of as a starting point, and I'll contact Doug and coordinate with you and see when's a good time we can have a conference call, and I can send this to Doug in the meantime.
Get the ball rolling, see if we can come up with a good plan that is presentable and palatable to the union also, since they have to sign off on it. And get all the legal questions answered.
Does the board need to have an idea of the dollar value that we may potentially be talking about? Those are going to say, well, okay, how much money do you think we're talking about? And I don't want to come in at some dollar figure that council may sit and go, ooh, or, you know, somebody's going to sit.
If you're going to do a lump sum, then he's working from a lump sum. If you're going to do a percentage, then you'd have to run that and say, okay, it'll cost the plan X based on a percentage. So if you're saying, I want to spend more $200,000, so run scenarios and tell you how that's going to shake out, and who's eligible and who's not, and who you can exclude, who you can't.
Yeah.
Just as an idea of what some of the ones cost back when we did the 3% ad hoc COLA, that was about $192,000 hit to the fund, that of the one-time hit.
Is that you talking about the police?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then when we did the additional supplement, that was about $106,000 hit to the fund. That, again, though, was based on salaries back then.
Right.
You know, police salaries have increased a good bit since that time. And when the police bureau was laid up.
Okay.
From those days, thankfully. It's been built back then. Which is why the retiree payments are the way they think.
Right.
And I started out with making $400 a month.
What year?
We don't want to date it, I guess. I'd be willing to bet it back in the 60s. I was going to put it in the 60s.
And it was because I had college.
So,
do we want to stay
covered with wagons?
Yes.
Do we want to stick with the $200,000 amount, or kind of set whatever anybody has ideas about?
But even looking at the numbers that Cindy presented, the 3%, which was $180,000-$190,000, I don't know what year
well,
we're
that
talking about that
end.
Money
so
is.
So, you know, what's the plan now? And yeah, it was like 2003.
That's we're at about 400 something million.
I mean, I look at the value, and I don't, maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way, but I see the value of the pensions at like 64 or 66 million, and I see the expenses that we have going out. I mean, right now is, if you ask me, could we absorb a $300,000 hit or something, I think we could. This would be the time to do it.
I mean, you're not, the way it works is you're not going to sell off your investments to pay this. I mean, it's going to be added
to the unfunded
liability in the plan.
Okay.
So you know, and if it's a percent of salaries, police payroll is 56. Was it, in the actual real estate, the way they look at the future salaries, it's 56 million. So if you do percentage wise, that's why it starts costing more, but if you do flat dollars, really, that's.
Right.
Those are really easy, because you can measure the impact, it becomes de minimis, and then you get one of those non-impact statements that says, hey, you know, this doesn't matter this way or that. And just from, you know, no one city council has an $8 million current deficit, small impact, they might overlook something that's adding and increasing what you have to pay, or you, like, you know, because we had to change those assumptions, remember, the state changed the tables that we have to use. So under the old tables, the unfunded liability in the plan would have been 17.6 million. With the change, it went up to 19.4 million. So a flat dollar amount would only, and it would be so minor you wouldn't even notice it, but a percentage might, you know, move that. And if Doug's running numbers, I might ask him to just run it both ways. Run it as a percent, run it with a flat dollar, and, you know, instead of presupposing what city council might do, we can give them both scenarios and, you know, we'll split the baby.
Right.
What if, was that if you don't ask, the answer is always no, right?
Right. Any other guidance y'all want to give?
I guess that's a good starting point. Or I don't know if it's easier for them, for him to use like a round dollar amount that fits more into the millions when they're dealing with it. But I don't know, say 250,000, you know.
Right.
I don't know if it's easier for them to figure off of that or that. So I'm fine with it either way. I mean, you kind of got to, if you're going to talk to them, got to get his thought on it and on what he thinks. You know, we do have a little bit of savings, if everybody will recall from doing this, the experience study. Thank God that brought some of that percent of payroll down. I mean, this would be like using some of that back in, is kind of the way I look at it. But I think we need to know the rules and have a hard plan that we can look at in, I guess, the next meeting, unless we call it a special.
Okay.
But, so we're in agreement to table it for now?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll get with you and I'll get a hold of Doug and we'll get a time when we can call it.
Okay.
All right. A review of the minutes of the prior meeting. Everybody get a chance to take a look at that when you nail something out.
Can we just say we appreciate everybody's time and we appreciate your concerns and thank you for listening to us.
No problem.
Thanks for
bringing it up. Hey, thanks for teaching us.
Thanks for your
question. Some of y'all didn't teach very well.
You look at the eye?
Yep.
Wow.
It's called being thrown under the bus.
Yeah.
That's just because you're so easy to get a rise out of.
Wow. All right. So, the prior meeting minutes. Quit calling me, people.
I make a recommendation we accept the meeting minutes from the prior meeting.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor of approving the prior meeting minutes?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? 5-0. Next is the approval of retirement benefits for Kent Mitchell.
Kenneth Mitchell retired from the department on July 13th after almost 28 years of service, 27.95 years of credited service. And he has elected to take a Social Security option with a payment at age, and I've got circled on your sheet there, with a payment payable to age 64 in the amount of $5,845.77 per month. And on April 1st, 2027, it'll drop to $5,246.81. And also a 5% lump sum in the amount of $37,505.68.
I'm sorry, 37,000?
Yeah, 37.
It's right at the top.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move we approve the benefits for Officer Mitchell.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Five oh.
In front of you is the, just as a reminder, that's the June 30 report, so it's nine months for your fiscal year. Have a good fiscal year going. If we look at the numbers, it's kind of a guesstimate, but it should be pretty close. We're probably up around 1.5% or so from the numbers you're looking at here. So if we can hang on to it, could be a good fiscal year. Historically, September hasn't been that kind to us, but things are a whole lot different out there, so maybe we'll see continue to grow. So keep that in mind as we go through the numbers. If you go to, I'll just skip to, page 7 is the last page of the policy review. Really, that's kind of a guideline review. There were no compliance issues. We did not identify any compliance issues to the quarter ending June 30, so everything was in compliance in the plan. If you turn to page 8, you can start to look at the returns. It was a pretty good quarter. On the left-hand side, you'll see the total fund was up 2.6%. Now, that number is net of investment management fees. Your investment management fees run a little over 60 basis points a year, which is a little over 0.5%. So these are net. I'll show you gross returns here in a minute. But that's 2.6 versus the target of 2.4, so we're actually a little bit ahead of target. Fiscal year to date, a little bit behind the target net of fees, 7.7% though, with about $4.88 million in earnings. And then go across the page, excuse me, the five-year number of 8.88, that's per year. So all those are annualized numbers after the 1 year. A little bit below the target index, but as I told you before, I'm actually pleasantly surprised that we're keeping up as well as we are in a bull market like this, because the kind of managers you have typically are the ones that are going to protect it and make it up on the downside. So on a gross return basis, we're actually ahead of the market in a pretty strong bull market environment. So that's what we like to see. You don't necessarily expect it in a strong bull market, but I like what I'm seeing. Page 9 is your asset allocation as of the end of June. We've taken some money out of equities, and we're still a little bit overweighted in equities. I'm not going to recommend any rebalancing domestic equities. I'm not going to recommend any rebalancing today. We're going to have some needs here over the next couple of months for some pretty large withdrawals, some payments Dale and I have talked about, and I can tell you right now those will come out of the domestic equity when we need the money, probably from Sawgrass and Westwood. So we can talk about that maybe after the report. How do we want to, if you want to approve something pending the need for the money, or how we might want to do that motion. But you can see we're underweighted in bonds. We're still underweighted in MLPs. MLPs had another. Those are your pipeline investments for, you know, the oil and natural gas here in the U.S. Haven't worked out at all like we expected. They've been extremely volatile and much higher correlation. That's why we're going to go ahead and just maintain this underweighting. But I'm not trying to be stubborn. I think the only reason you'd get out of them is if you just think the American energy story is dead. Fundamentally, we've dug into that like no other asset class, quite frankly, and the fundamentals are still very good. So we really don't understand why they had a bad quarter. They were down 6.6%, but rig count's up from like 600 to 900, which means more's coming out of the ground. If it comes out of the ground, it's got to go from point A to point B. They're growing their distributions. They're still yielding 6 or 7%, but the market is spooked by the price of oil. But almost all the companies in Texas and the Dakotas now can make money with oil in the 40s, and oil's hovering around $45-$50 a barrel. So they're making money. There's more coming out of the ground. There's more going through the pipelines, but the market's hitting them. So we're not really understanding why they're not behaving a little bit better. Back when oil went from 126 to 26, it kind of made sense that everybody was a little spooked that even if the volumes were only down about 4 or 5% going through the pipelines, but there was fear there that the drillers wouldn't be able to make the commitments, wouldn't be able to pay the pipelines and pay the storage facilities because they were going to get in so much financial stress. That's not the case now. Fundamentals are good. The risk level should be low, but they still went down 6% over the 6.5% for the last quarter. So they're much more volatile. They're much more correlated to oil than what we had seen historically with the asset class. And that's a little odd because well over half, in the neighborhood of 65% or so of what's going through these pipelines or more is natural gas. So the correlation to oil doesn't really make a whole lot of fundamental sense. So it's more of a market perception, we think, than it is a fundamental problem from everything that we've been able to dig into. So if you're about 3.3%, I don't want to add to it just till we see that volatility and correlations go down. Your target was 5, but we haven't gone there. So it's just an asset class that I've been doing this a long time. That's probably the one that's kind of surprised us the most and can't really, bluntly can't get a good handle around why it's behaving the way it is. And we've talked to pro-MLP people and anti-MLP people, and everybody seems to agree fundamentals are still pretty solid. So it's got to be a perception and a risk.
What did we originally fund this with?
I'd have to go back and look, Mike. I don't remember right off the top of my head. It's a loss. We're in the hole still.
I think it was 2.5 billion, wasn't it?
That might be about right, because we're down about 10% per year for the last 3 years on it. When I sit here last quarter, or in fact, I've got the last quarter report, it looked like they were coming back. When you looked at the trailing 12 months, in the last quarter's report, the one-year return was 26% for the asset class. And this year, it loses 6 this quarter, dropped off a good quarter, and the one-year number, I think, is 4. So that's the volatility I'm talking about. It's just been much more volatile.
For 4 years?
About 3.5, I think. Remember when we first looked at it and looked at all the historical numbers? And one of the reasons we liked it was that you weren't buying the commodity. It had very low correlation to the other asset classes you're invested in. And it had a very attractive yield. And it was a nice story. You know, we'd rather use our own oil and gas than have to buy it from Saudi Arabia or countries that don't care for us. So the story was good, the fundamentals looked good, and oddly enough, they still do, even though the returns have been horrible. So, I mean, it may be a time we say, let's get out, we're up a little bit this quarter. So it's just been a wilder ride, and that's why we've, much wilder ride than we expected, and that's why we're saying just hold where you are, don't get excited. I don't want you to lose sight, though, when we look at the overall plan's doing pretty well. Now, MLPs have dragged us down a little bit, but we only have 3-4% in the asset class. If it underperforms, you know, it doesn't damage the total return too much. That said, it's not an asset class we want to add to with this, with the kind of volatility that we've seen at this point. So I'm glad to answer any questions on that before we go forward, because you know, there's just no doubt it hasn't worked out. When we went into convertibles, they worked out very well. Real estate's worked out very well.
And
this one has it. So when we diversify, but we are, you know, trying to look long term, and I know, you know, coming up on 4 years is not long term, but it's long enough we should see better results than we have. But
why don't we bring that up?
That's a good idea. Let them talk to you about it a little bit.
I want to hear from them.
Yeah.
Because I'm
getting, by the way, it's not
me
just
personally, I'm getting leery about that 4 years.
And just so you know, it's not Westwood. All the MLP managers that we work with have had the same problem in terms of this is the asset class problem, not the manager. That's another thing that's even more confusing about your portfolio, because your portfolio is made up of the stronger balance sheet firms, the better financed firms, the higher quality firms. And because you do have an actively managed portfolio of master limited partnerships run by Westwood. And so they're picking good quality companies, it doesn't matter. Anybody associated with the asset class is kind of is experiencing the same ride, I guess.
Yeah, you can see on page 12 for the quarter, I mean, they're basically neck and neck with their index.
Yeah, they've actually
exceeded the index for the fiscal year and for the 1 year.
Slightly ahead.
And just slightly behind on the 3 year.
Actually,
right ahead on the 3 year.
When you get in the negative, you have to think back for a second. But, yeah.
It hasn't worked out.
Yeah. Its cost is about, I think I calculated about 30 basis points in total performance, you know, from the total return standpoint. But, and we're wrestling with it. I mean, I'm being blunt with you. We've never had an asset class behave like this from the standpoint of, you know, if you see fundamentals break down, you expect to see something break down. We've seen that. We saw that in the late 90s with tech. Those kind of stories are kind of easy to get your hands around and either decide to run, take your losses and run. And this is one where it's tempting. I don't believe Mike's vote is take our losses and run. But regardless of what's happened the last 3.5 years, I'm sitting here thinking, where do I want to be 3.5? What do I think is going to be 3.5 years from now? I've been wrong on this one. 3.5 years ago, we were wrong. But I think it's still a good story. And like I said, the fundamentals are there. There's not a breakdown here. The breakdown is in the market itself, not the companies and not the fundamentals. So why don't we do that, Mike? We'll have them in and maybe have them at the next meeting. And hear some more about it before you make any drastic decisions.
Where do you reach your point where you kind of lose confidence?
Well,
have you
thought
about that at all?
Pardon me?
Have you thought about when you kind of have lost your confidence?
Well, we had a lot of discussions internally about it, and whether, you know, should we just bail on the asset class because it hasn't behaved, and that's where I get back to the fundamentals. And right now our decision is to hang in it right where we are, not to add to it, because the adding to it, the risk level is just too much higher than we thought it was going to be, the volatility, and then that correlation to oil, which, again, fundamentally doesn't really make much sense, and oil prices have stabilized. So it just isn't behaving like it should under the circumstances. The only negative that I see out there for it from a fundamental standpoint is that a lot of these firms are pretty highly levered. They borrow a lot of money. How they keep building their infrastructure and build more pipelines and all. And with rates rising, there was concern that their borrowing costs would go up pretty significantly. And and maybe that would hurt some. Well, that should impact, I would say that should impact the lower quality names, but not the kind of companies you're owning. And even though the Fed has raised rates three times, intermediate and long-term rates haven't moved. They've actually gone down a little bit. So it hasn't been like the Fed raises rates and rates just took off. That didn't happen. The short end of the, you know, the yield curve, you see the yield curves where you get short rates over here and long-term rates over here, what's happening is the yield curve just flattened out. Short rates have come up, and intermediate long-term have stayed the same. So a lot of these companies aren't getting hit that hard by the borrowing costs. And if anybody knows should take a hit from that, it would be, again, lower quality firms that, that have to borrow even more or have trouble accessing credit lines, getting credit lines. That's not the kind of companies you own. So but they're kind of getting thrown out with everybody, I guess, with that fear. That's the only negative fundamental I see. Volumes are up, rig count. Again, rig count's a big thing here, because if rig counts are up, that means there's more being pumped out of the ground, whether it's gas or oil. In oil's case, it's gone from, I think, 600 to 900 over the last several months.
So is it a correlation to the stockpile then? Because every time you read, you pick up the paper and read, you know, we're at a new record stockpile and sitting on it, and we're just sitting there, and that drives the price of gas down again, and drives, you know, or oil, I say, well, and correspondingly gas, you know, is it, is that we're sitting on such a stockpile?
But they're still pumping, Mike. They're still pumping.
I know, but they keep building.
And oil prices are still, are now, have been pretty stable in the $45 to $50 range. So if you had this oversupply that everybody was extremely worried about, oil would be selling back in the 20s again. And it's not. And interestingly enough, the U.S. has now become that, that kind of that swing producer. Because we're producing about 15% of the world's oil now, and we're now going to start exporting it. So we can pull more out of the ground and get and have places for it to go. We've already been an exporter of natural gas. So, but like the Saudis, for instance, are about, they're about 15%. Believe it or not, they're not that much bigger than us in terms of their supply. But they're pretty much maxed out. And they need oil. They need oil at $60 to $80 a barrel. So they're not going to produce a whole lot more. They're not going to be that swing if they can help it. Now they have a lot of sway in OPEC, obviously, and so they can influence prices. But so far, OPEC has been pretty reluctant to flood the market. So again, oil has been pretty stable. The U.S. oil rig count is up substantially. There's more volume coming out.
So everybody's scratching their heads.
That's the head scratching. You are getting paid, even though the total returns are what they are, and that's what we have to live with. You are getting paid about 6 to 7% in yield while you kind of wait. The distribution levels, and that'd be something I think if Westwood comes in, they can talk more specific about the individual holdings. But the distribution levels, the growth in distributions, which is your yield on these MLPs. MLPs are just stocks. They're just owned different from a corporate standpoint, legal standpoint. But they've been growing their distributions and paying out more every year. So, again, fundamentally, they're just, some of it doesn't make sense. So, and it does get frustrating that we end up spending so much time talking about an asset class that's had, such a rough ride. Doesn't make up a whole lot of your portfolio and kind of overrides the fact that the portfolio is doing okay. So I'll go through the rest of the portfolio and then come back to it if we need to. But we will plan on having Westwood in. And when they come in, they also talk about their large cap value product from there. If you go to page 12, take a look at the returns. These are before fees were taken out.
Okay. And, I'm sorry.
Yes.
One thing that I noticed on what we were on.
Yeah.
Why, since we switched to Wells Fargo, has this sweep cash account been so high when we were like nothing before? Maybe I didn't see what, but it didn't seem like with being with Bank of New York, there was ever that much sitting there Is there an explanation for that?
We have been paying out a lot of benefits.
Yeah, we've been raising, remember, this is a snapshot, and we had to raise some money to pay some big bucks.
Okay, so this is the one time.
I mean, we've had it a couple quarters, I think.
I can tell you, as of Monday, before the contributions hit, there was $3,000 in the account, I was sweating.
Okay, that is my question.
Yeah, I signed the two.
There was only $277,000 in the March report, so we had to raise some cash, and we sold Sawgrass, I think, and Westwood.
Right.
Westwood Large Cap Value, not the MLPs.
Okay.
So sold the MLPs, but sold the Large Cap Value. But sold the Large Cap Value.
And along those lines, we do have some other expenses we're going to talk about later, but our state check still hasn't come in, and we're hoping it'll be...
Hopefully, we're going to be okay.
We're hoping it'll be in line with what we got last year, which was just over $500,000, so...
We're going to need all that, and hopefully it's every penny, so... We've got two big benefits to pay out later this year, still.
This year? At least two, wasn't it?
Two more.
Is it two, just two, or I thought there were...
Oh, we just paid out two, we got two more.
You got two more.
Pivotal and...
Caglio, Reese.
Those are the two that have already been paid. You got two pending, which is Bib and...
Bib and...
Is it McBride?
Caglio will be paid on next month.
Okay.
He left on the first, it starts on the first of September.
So I'll work with Lucian and Dale, make sure we have a cash bill. Man, did a pretty good raise it pretty quick.
Yeah, it just so happens that we really needed it, and I think those who transferred over in the finance were out, so it didn't get done until like Monday or Tuesday, and then I needed it Wednesday, and...
Well, too close.
Yeah, it was a little too close to my comfort.
$200,000 here, $200,000 there.
Yeah, I think we actually pulled $835,000 out of the account.
Well, the returns are on page 12, and you can see for the quarter up 2.7% versus the target. That was a little bit, the ranking shows a little bit below average, but I'll show you how tight that range was for the quarter, so wouldn't be concerned about that. If you go down for the quarter, you go down the column, Westwood had a pretty good quarter. As you can see, they were up 3.6. Their benchmark was 1.3. That's their large cap value equity product. And that was in the top 15%. Sawgrass has really struggled. I want to have them in here before too long. We're actually going to have them into our office probably this next quarter. They've been all over the place. As recently as a year ago, they were doing okay, as I recall, and now they've struggled. And the main reason they're struggling is they're not owning those higher priced big tech stocks, the FANG stocks, as they call them, Facebook, Alphabet, Amazon. Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, I think, was the way they used to call it. Now Google's Alphabet. So it'd be FANA stocks instead of FANG stocks, I guess. But I think they've owned some of them at times, but if you didn't own those here recently, you probably underperformed your benchmark in that category. So a little concern there about their performance, although they're up 13.9% per year for the last 5 years, but you can see their benchmark is 15, so... Frontier didn't have a good quarter, but they've had a good run with you for the last several years, so they're ahead of their benchmark 5 years, ranked well. Hood River's had a really good start with you, as you can see. And then we get down to the MLPs. A rough quarter again, as I said. Convertibles had a pretty good quarter, up 2.1. The convertibles are a little below that benchmark, but that's because they're pretty defensive. When we get bull markets like this, convertibles are a wide spectrum. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but you can own convertibles that are well into the money, meaning that the stock price is way up there and they won't give you any protection on the downside, or you can own convertibles that are so far out of the money that they're just a bond and they won't give you any upside of the market. Advent tries to buy in that middle range, so ultimately, what you end up with Advent is about 70-75% of the upside of the stock market, but only about 50-60% of the downside over the long run. So That's, but the index is a little bit all over the place, so. Your international had a really good course, had a great year, as you can see. International's up 22.8%. That's Euro-Pacific. It's been a really good fund for you over the long run, as you can see. That now pulled the five-year international up to 10.1. Real estate has been a pretty good addition for the last 3 years, up 10.2%. Remember, we took some money out of bonds for that, and, well, I say took it out of bonds. What we did was, back several years ago, we said we don't think bonds are going to give you much in this low-rate environment. It's not a really good place to have a whole lot of your money, so we took the target down from, I think, several years ago, we were probably as high as 35-40%, worked it down to 25%, which is where your target is now. But didn't want to take the risk, didn't want to take all that bond money and just throw it into stocks. So added convertibles many years ago, real estate, and the MLPs, which haven't worked out. But as you can see, relative to bonds, real estate's given us 10% for the last 3 years. The next page shows you that fixed income has given us 2.1. So that's been a good place to park some of the fixed income along with the convertibles, without taking the risk of stocks. And that was kind of the plan of the MLPs. I'm not saying it isn't going to work. You have to be determined on the MLPs. Page 14 is the, I mentioned the tight range there for the quarter. You can see that's what this, I don't usually go over this chart with you, but just to kind of show you that the median return for the quarter was 2.9%, just 30 basis points moved you to the top 25%, so 0.3%, so really tight range for the quarter. Page 15, most boards find this chart kind of interesting because it's just a simple chart, but it says a lot. We've been in a nice bull market now for several years, so the markets have been pretty kind to us. The green line represents your net cash flow in the plan. So that's contributions minus payouts and expenses and benefits. And the blue line represents the market value each quarter, and that's looking back for the last 5 years. The difference between the green line and the blue line is investment earnings. And that's about, for the last 5 years, that's about $24,136,000 or so.
I'll look for the green line to get better. I'll look for the green line to get better anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, bull markets help. Page 16, I do bring up a little bit now, just so you understand all this diversification you've got and why we proposed it over the years, and why you, I think most of you know, but it's just really to control the risk. We've obviously had some pretty good returns, 9.4% per year for the last 5 years. We like those numbers. I'll show you a chart in a minute that shows, I think, 8 out of the last 12 fiscal years you've beaten the 8% assumption rate. No, but have we taken a lot of risk to do it? And that's what this shows on the far right side, standard deviation column. For the 5 years, you see 5.16, and for the 3 years, you see total fund standard deviation of 4.88. Standard deviation is a measurement of volatility. The higher that number, the more volatile the portfolio. And to give you some reference, if you go down, you can see the different asset classes and what their standard deviations are. So, for instance, on the 3 year total fund is let's go 5 years. 5 years, you've got 9.45% with a standard deviation of 5.16. If you were 100% in small cap stocks, your standard deviation would have been, that's the Russell 2000, would have been 11.46. And large cap, that's the Russell 1000, would have been 7.56, and so on. So that gives you an idea of how volatile the different asset classes are by themselves that you invest in. And the question then is, how would you, you know, by doing the diversification and adding it in, your standard deviation has been fairly low, as you can see. So try to control the risk. And then page 17 is the fiscal year to date returns I mentioned. So if you kind of go across that page, you'll see that 8 out of 12 periods you have managed to meet your actuarial assumption rate. There's 13 periods listed because we have the fiscal year to date of 8, and it's 8.18. That's a 9-month number. You're up somewhere probably 9.5 to 10% as we sit here today. And then the last chart I'll go over with you is on page 18. and try to manage the risk, try to get consistent long-term returns, and that's what this chart is measuring on page 18 in the top left. Those are five-year periods measured every quarter, looking back at the last 5 years. So that's 10 years worth of data, if you follow me. So 5 years ago, we looked at the return for the previous 5 years. Every quarter, we do the same thing, go back 5 years. And then we're saying, how did you rank relative to your peer group in that period of time? And what it says then is that 35% of the time, you were in the top 25% of your peer group. 50% of the time, you were in the second quartile, between the 25 and 50th. So in this case, 85% of the rolling five-year periods over the last 5 years, you've been in the top half. You've beaten your peer group, basically, 85% of the time. So that's, we'd like to see that number even higher, but at least that is showing some consistency. The chart right below it is on a rolling three-year basis, looking back the last 5 years, and that one works out to about 90% of the time being in the top 50% of your peer group. So we like that kind of consistency. I'm a little bit pleasantly surprised that you're keeping up as well as you are in a strong bull market. Hopefully that doesn't mean we won't keep up as well in a down market, but active managers typically do pretty well, and the types of managers you have typically protect pretty well in down markets. So the stock market is continued to run, having a good day today, and at least when I came in, who knows by now. But you hear a lot of talk about maybe the market being overvalued or its valuation being very high, and I'll tell you, on a 75-80 year basis, the average price to earnings ratio, that's the price of the stock divided by the earnings per share, the average over the last 75-80 years is about 15 times the forward 12-month earnings. So if you project out what the earnings are going to be for a company 12 months down the road, typically on average they're going to sell at about 15 times that number. That's a 75-80 year average. Right now stocks are selling between 18 and 19 times earnings. So that sounds expensive, but when you look at it, break it down to interest rate cycles, I would argue it's not overly priced. It's kind of the high end of a normal range. Because when the interest rates are low, the stock market will support a higher price to earnings ratio. So that 75-80 year average is taking into account all kinds of interest rate cycles, and we're sitting at a place still where interest rates are at historical lows. So to be selling a little bit above the 75-year average with interest rates as low as they are, and the earnings numbers have been pretty strong, and the economy actually looks as though there's some momentum there. You got 2.6% GDP growth and unemployment down pretty low right now. So I think we'll just go ahead and let the slight overweighting in stocks continue and kind of rebalance by taking the money where we need it from there. Take a little risk off the table, but we kind of like where we are longer term. So,
okay. What is smart beta?
Smart beta? Smart beta is a term that managers like to use that sounds like it's really impressive, and all it is typically when it's used, and I don't know what you're looking at, but typically what it's used is take an index product and we're going to try to add a little bit of value by tweaking the index a little bit.
Now, at the pension conference, a guy was talking about they use a program called Smart Beta to control things, and he made it sound...
Well, you actually, I could label that. I could label your total portfolio as a smart beta portfolio. Because your beta is going to be a little bit less. Beta is another measurement of volatility. Actually, beta is a measurement of the volatility related to the market. And you have a little bit lower beta than the market. So that would be, I would equate it more to my discussion about standard deviation and trying to control the risk by diversifying the portfolio And there's different techniques where the managers will claim they're adding smart beta to the portfolio. So it's really a risk management tool that you can question how smart it is based on how their returns are. But that's kind of been a new buzzword the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
To touch on one thing Larry brought up is our funds needs between now and the next meeting. We do have two additional drop payouts that are going to need to be made, and to the tune of about $475,000. And for those two, we've had Reese this month, which was 410,697. We'll have Scaglione in September, and then Thibodeau in October, because he leaves the end of September.
When, how much state money are you expecting?
Don't know yet. I haven't seen the list.
516 last year, we're hoping it's going to be in that neighborhood anyway.
We'll be okay if it's in the 500 neighborhood. And we should get that before we have to pay out.
Yeah, we've gotten the approval letter from the state on our state report, so we should be hopefully getting
it. I'm going to look at me and say, I looked last week and I didn't have anything on their website yet, but okay. Yeah, I don't know.
That's usually the third week of August to the first of September.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we do need to get some money, my recommendation right now, unless something drastic happens in the market, would be to get it from Westwood and Sawgrass and the large cap products so we can raise it pretty quick.
And then just
split, very liquid. Split, yeah, split it then 50-50.
If we do need some, it should be, like I said, it'll be close, depending on how much that check is.
Yeah, the lower amount's going to be the September payment, and then the higher one will be in October.
Next order of business is approval for Alicia Gaither's attendance at the Division of Retirement Conference. Do you want to handle that?
No, I went to the Tallahassee.
I know. Is this for the Orlando one, or are we approving it post facto?
Post.
Oh,
next post facto.
After the meeting, I think after our last meeting or whatever, we had quite a bit of hurdles and issues with the state report, and I kind of decided at the last minute to go. I scheduled, permitted and stuff like that. So,
you really didn't answer much, though.
That was the 1st of June, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the end of May, 1st of June. I did get some one-on-one time.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, her presentation didn't answer a whole lot.
No, that was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know there's problems. Yeah, we're working on them on a case-by-case basis. Yeah.
Yeah, that rollout of that state report in a digital format this year was kind of ready, fire, aim.
Seriously.
It was.
We submitted it several times. It didn't get submitted.
And it would tell us we've accepted it. Then we get another thing that says you still need to submit your report, and we've already submitted it, and multiple times.
Did things we thought it wouldn't take it, the drop payments, so we put them somewhere else. We manipulated it. But we got through it. It got approved finally, a little late, but.
What kind of
money? We also got letters stating that we needed to do a resubmission, and a resubmission had
been
submitted.
It had already been submitted.
So.
What was the cost on your attendance?
For this plan, I don't have it. It was under $100.
It was shared between the three plans?
Yep, it was shared between the three plans. Yep.
I thought you were going to go to the
The next one?
No. The next one I did find out is in November, early November. There's no legislative updates, so.
There will be.
Will there by November?
Well, there might be bills filed.
Bills filed.
Because committee weeks start in September. Legislative session is, you know, they're doing every couple of years, they're changing it up. Normally it starts in March, but 2018 is an election year, so they're going to start legislative session in January so they could be home campaigning. Which means all the delegation meetings, the legislative hearings, committee meetings will happen in September, October, November of this year. So my first set of meetings is like September 13th or something like there. So there might be bills filed, but, I mean, because it'll be close to the end of session by then. Filing anyway, but.
The general plan actually paid for it all. I'm just waiting for approval for them to be reimbursed. They were okay with if the board didn't want to approve it later. I forgot that amount. I don't have it. I'd have to get back to you. If you want to wait until the next meeting to approve it. Yeah, it was very.
Make a motion to just accept the nominal that's needed to cover our firm.
Yeah, I think your percentage is like 11% of the total. Fires is like 9.
Motion?
That's what I was going to ask. Can we approve it without having the cost or?
I think the motion's going to have to be a little bit more specific.
Provide it's not over X amount of dollars. Or
11% of whatever the total was.
Our share.
Our share of whatever the total was.
Yeah.
Make a motion that we accept 1/3 of the cost.
11%.
11%. That's not even 1/3.
It's divided by my costs are divided by the actual members in the plan, so.
So they got 700.
So the general.
Usually I ask beforehand.
Based on number of employees.
Usually we ask beforehand, but it was after the meeting.
Make a motion, we accept 11% of the bill.
I'll say that. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The attorney's report?
Well, at the time, we thought the attorney was going to be here, but the attorney is not here. And he's out on extended medical leave and,
Great.
And I have no report from him.
We did get an email that said if we had any questions, we could call Christian.
You write down a question?
Yeah.
And you were there, I think you were there, but the guy specifically brought up these new recruits, and we was talking about police recruits that are getting hired by departments. And then a case down south where the guy got disabled while he was in the recruit academy, but he was being played by the police department. I realize when they're in this police recruit or whatever we're calling it, they're paying into the general.
Yes.
But if they become totally and permanently disabled from being a police officer, his thing was that a plan down there, and I don't know how they were structured, if they were paying into a general versus police or whatever, or the guy was already paying the police, that the police plan had to foot the bill for that. Even though the guy never worked a day as a cop in his life.
They're being hired as a civilian.
Right.
Yeah.
Our position, the law enforcement recruit is a civilian position. It's not a sworn position.
So if they become totally and permanently disabled,
it's going to be under the general plan.
That's what I want to make sure of, because this one, they said he specifically said a police plan recently had to pay out on this, and the guy never worked a day in his life. He apparently destroyed his entire lower leg almost to the point of amputation in the academy.
Okay. No, our law enforcement recruit position is a civilian position, and they're until they actually passed the state certification test and they have that FDLE certification in hand, that's when they become a sworn police officer and are to the police pension.
I have a question about that while Randy's here, too.
Yeah, it's different. I know.
It's different than fire.
185, we hire them on the fact they're in our pension plan from day one.
From day one?
They have no experience. They've not been through recruit school or anything. They're in our
that must be what that place down south that he was talking about is doing.
That's by plan, so.
Is that by plan? I mean, I know it's written in the ordinance for police that way, but.
And 175, you have a year to get your certification.
Do you know, I mean, is there a, what was the reason behind the police officers not being able to go directly in? Like
partly because of that, because they're not rendering service as a law enforcement officer. And the only way you could include them is if you do the TEA on them, a temporary employment authorization from the date of hire. Then they could be included, but the PD doesn't do that.
I'm not sure about 185, but 175, you can hire them straight off the street and they have 1 year to get certification.
No, to be a cop, you gotta be certified beforehand.
Except the department can put in for a TEA.
We could do that.
Our agency doesn't do it.
And the, one of the reasons why I ask is because when it does come down to their pension, there's confusion. There's logistics as to keeping the time. Especially when you go from system to system to system to system and they have worked here 30 years. To be able to, you know, even pull someone's wages, which Dale knows I've been working with him. You know, we've got 10, 15 people that have dual pensions. And we've gone through three or four systems to find their earnings. We really are just going back to their W-2s, which is not necessarily correct, but it's the only documentation we do have.
That would be correct. I pay taxes on their
retirement. You worked here back in the 80s, and you worked 6 months in general plan and then moved. We don't have records that say this is how much you earned from this date to this date to this date to this date.
Yeah.
So we're taking your W-2 divided by 12. You know, we've got a formula that we're using for everybody, but.
Well, so we don't pay them their full salary either while they're going through recruit school.
Yeah.
We pay them a reduced salary while they're in recruit school, and they don't get a police officer's salary until they get that certification. Plus, we don't hire police officers. We only advertise on our website for police officers. You must be certified.
The downside to it is if we did do that, here's the problem, okay? They make it through, we put them on as a police officer, and they start paying into this plan. It's going to create headaches for you because let's say meaning in a higher 10, okay, and they get through the state exam, through the academy, through the state exam, and they get to field training. Mm-hmm. On average,
it's a field training.
On average,
mm-hmm.
Five of them are going to be gone.
Well, and see that as an administrative, it doesn't matter because everybody
makes a contribution. It's work one way or work one way.
Everybody makes right. A contribution, so we refund them anyways.
Yeah.
So to us, it doesn't matter what plan they're in. When they leave, they're either going to get a refund or. Right.
Well, then my biggest concern is what I just asked about.
Why it was done that way, and if it, you know, if the why is still necessary,
that's
or
my favorite.
You know, yeah. Is it beneficial to maybe look at another way?
It would also be the difference between paying them 40-something thousand versus 20-something
20,
thousand.
26, 27, yeah.
So. For the fiscal
also,
side, for the city,
it's
saving them a lot.
More of it's like more of an incentive for these students to, okay, you know, really work harder to achieve that certification, that badge, that camaraderie, to become a real police officer, to, you know, right now I'm just a recruit. And that, you know, because a lot of times they say, oh, well, I've already got everything I need. I just need the paper. But they're still paying me the same amount of money. And there's... Well, you guys have hired people now. You know what you're up against.
So they've gone back to paying people to the academy now?
Yeah.
Or I mean paying their tuition.
Yeah.
What kind of agreement they have to sign to stay on afterwards?
2 years.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and also we pay for a line of school, you know, and the sun puts it around. It's very costly, and it's quite a lot.
That was the question I had for Lee, just how that would work out, but if they're in general, they're in general, and if general is responsible?
They're 401 now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is no disability.
Then there is no disability.
There's no risk.
Well, there you go. Made it much easier there.
Now,
there's still dual.
True. There's still dual, but it's a, no, there's no,
There's no cross credit. Right. Yeah.
The rest of it, I'll have to get on paper for you so you can send it to them so you can get answers, because I have a couple of questions about statutes that were mentioned up there and about. There was another question about interim benefits, the one time change and how that worked, where you chose one at the beginning, that the guy was trying to explain all that
thing. When you're talking about the active employee, if you're an active employee, and one of the people stood up there and said that, that's one I wanted to get clarification on too. But as an active employee, I could go in and choose my elections now, and if something happens to me, you have to honor those elections. Now, if I choose joint annuitant and I pass away and I haven't started receiving my benefits, that's what is supposedly has to be honored.
Yeah.
And that has not been the assumption in the past. It's, you know, if you haven't made the, you know, you can't make the election until you leave. And if you were to die beforehand, then it would be the 10-year guarantee, and that would be it. That the beneficiary would be dead. But yeah, that's a pretty big one, because active employees don't know that they can make an election and that be their option when something happens.
That is a big one.
I'm not sure our plan actually provides for that.
Yeah, what is our
plan? State was saying that, what, you know, unless you have specific language that says that it doesn't.
It does.
It does.
I think ours
has. And that was
Sarah. Because I said so.
Sarah from FRS and the attorney from Klausner. Yeah. So.
It was the lady. Mm-hmm. I can't remember her name. I'm
sorry.
Bonnie,
was talking about it.
Yes.
But do we have a default provision in our, with your default?
No.
That I know of.
No.
No, we do have a provision there that somebody
got. We have a normal benefit,
right.
But it doesn't say it's the default.
Ours does have a provision that says if a member passes away before drawing their benefit, that then their surviving beneficiary has options.
Right, that the survivor has options.
Select.
But if the active member comes in and makes an election before they die, then that is. And somebody raised their hand and said whether they're receiving benefits or not, and they said yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was that I understand
that.
All that
now you know
that
what
they in the election, and that election stands because they signed and said, "This is what I want."
And Lee was supposed to be there. We were supposed to ask him, but he
was there. And just based on Lee, because I know the general plan talked this morning about the fact that Lee's like there's no succession plan, and what they want to do about that. And I don't know if you all have discussed that or
not. The general plan is planning on doing an RFP for actuary, consultant, and attorney. But because it raised the question that they haven't done one in more than 10 years for either of the three. And you know that the you know
and they also talked about doing what they're calling reporters, reviewing the people that you hired, actuary, attorney, and consultant, you know, based against their performance against what you hired them to do, and, you know, so you can document, you know, how their performance has been, so that when you go to renew a contract or not renew one, it's not, well, oh, there was that one time this or that, it, you know, it's just some type of a more formalized process.
Yeah. not saying they're going to make any changes, but we're going to do their digital updates.
What, me, this probably isn't the place to discuss his, somebody's health in public format. I'm just curious to know. What's our thought? Not coming back?
We don't know. We have, I haven't been, haven't heard anything in probably about a month and a half. Just that Christensen was available by phone if we wanted to.
But they had nobody to come to meetings or anything like that?
He wasn't available at the time to come to the meetings because he had other scheduled. I think he's trying to take on his and Lee's and juggle both. So I think to accommodate that, he was trying to, you know, make sure he was available by phone for this meeting. Because I don't know that it was, I think Lee is on a, he needs something that, he's got some complications and needs a procedure, but the complications have to work its way out.
Right.
So they don't know a timeline.
Originally thought he'd be done. I talked to Scott last week and originally thought he'd already had his surgery and be done. Bypass surgery and he had some complications. Couldn't do the surgery until he had some other things fixed, and that's kind of the ongoing issue. So I talked to Scott. He said they didn't really have to. He was just trying to cover it as best he could this quarter, doing a lot of meetings or being available by phone for a lot of meetings because it's just the two of them as attorneys, and they have 150.
I think it's close to
around 150 public pension funds, and you know, there's no way Scott can make that up. Mm-hmm. He can't. I mean, they're on, both of them are on the road almost 100% of the time, so he needs to get back to work or I don't know what. He didn't really, he didn't share a plan with me.
I know, a few years ago, we asked what Lee's session plan was, and he pretty much told us he didn't have one. He planned on continuing working.
Yeah, I tried to remind him with some people, you know. I've recommended some attorneys I work with up in the Panhandle and some stuff that, just because I know they have a lot of business up in the Panhandle, and I thought, well, maybe they'd want to team up with somebody. They haven't pursued that option. So I don't know what their plans are as far as that goes, other than, yeah, they end up, Scott just keeps his accounts and the rest kind of go out. I don't know.
I think by the next meeting, and it depends too how much, as long as you can get the answers you need, give in a timely manner for the time being, and then if by the next meeting it becomes an issue for you, then we can.
Was that you not getting
it? Well, I mean, I stated it in this meeting and in the general meeting. You know, with the police board, we really don't have too many issues with getting stuff timely. But with the general board, we do for some reason. It takes months and months and months to get contracts, get answers. Sometimes I don't even get answers. I have to come back with timelines. So the general board is, you know, thinking about taking steps to see if there's something more productive to the plan.
Something like about the next meeting, I guess, see how your experience goes in the next couple of months.
And honestly, Dale works with Lee more on with this board than I do.
There was a time when Lee was not at all responsive to what our requests and our needs were. Back when Lee Winston was chairman of the board, and we basically put him on notice that, you know, he'd better straighten up or we were going to take action to replace him. And since that time, that might be why he's more responsive to us than he has been to the general.
I honestly
suggested that maybe Arnie might need to send the same type of letter to him. But
I honestly
need to kick somebody while they're down. I mean, it's only medical leave, but there's still work to be done. I've had a couple of issues that I've run by them and got immediate response back from Scott. I mean, very quick. And I hate to say it, but probably quicker than we would have had Lee been on the job. But we got a very, very quick response back from Scott.
I do think Lee's plan is to come back. I won't speak for him because I don't know for sure, but I know when he originally was going in, that was, it's going to be a, might be out, might miss a quarter, I'll be right back.
Right.
Now, it's definitely missing this quarter, might be, now it's next quarter.
Now it's at the three-month mark, and it's...
It's kind of a, almost a moving target right now, because he just doesn't, he doesn't know. And I guess why we're not getting updates, because I don't think they know what to say.
He has nothing to update yet, yeah.
So meanwhile, Scott's just trying to cover as much as he can.
Well, I mean, depending on what happens with him and what General does, you can always look at an economy of scale thing if it comes to that or something.
I think it was...
I just have to figure out how. Yeah, for all three, I just have to figure out how, because Lee usually does that on our fees.
Well,
I'll leave that.
That's what you do. That's what you do, what the attorney's doing, pull out an old one.
I've got one, I've got one, it's within place.
And send the bill, board a bill for...
Wait,
we can do it in house.
Yeah, I mean, I've got one that's, you know, for an attorney from Lee, but I don't know that Path is to ask the attorney's office to do that.
I know, I wouldn't think.
I mean, we could, for the actuary and for the consultant, but...
But he's not even available right now, good.
I think you could do one in house that would cut mustard.
The general board has also asked us to come back with an evaluation, some type of evaluation for the professionals, because, you know, we've had, you know, they do an evaluation on the managers every month, or every quarter, like something at least once a year, you know, are the consultants getting you what you need, or the attorneys, the actuaries, are they, you know, providing you with the information you request on time, is it accurate, all that kind of stuff. We have to come up with something, so...
I'm just trying to think what an actuary, how you come up with it, that, but you couldn't even begin to figure out if his number is right or not.
Well, that's true, with their calculations, that kind of thing, you know, with what we send them, is it, you know, tie in with what they, you know, are our files close to theirs?
For the other stuff that we need actuaries for, so we have templates for that. It's more about service base, you know? I mean, and all actuaries are peer reviewed, so they're looks...
Our custodian is Wilfargo, you know, there for a long time, we kept Bank of New York just because we kept Bank of New York. Are you, your experience is better?
Oh, from previous? It's a pretty low bar, but yeah.
And I hope that it flows through, but in the general plan, we want to set up some type of evaluation that those services that we're paying a quarterly fee for are at least being examined once a year.
Well, there was a time we tried to have each one of our managers in at least once a year. And we've got so many managers now that we've kind of gotten away from that. And if you did that, you'd have, you know, a couple managers in every meeting.
Yeah.
And instead of two-hour meetings, you could be having a four-hour meeting.
You couldn't do them on the valuation meeting because Doug's thing is so long that...
Well, I think we have had them in when we've had some concerns and stuff, so I think that kind of makes sense when you have...
I mean, you guys are dealing with them, isn't it?
Yeah, and the consultants actually, yeah, they're reviewing them.
We visit over, either in our office or at their office, over 100 managers a year, so, and then we see them all in the quarterly meetings. Some do still have them come to the meetings, and so we see them pretty frequently, that's for sure.
Looks like here earlier this afternoon, we talked about Sawgrass needs to come in, Westwood needs to come in about their MLP products, but...
Yeah.
Might not be a bad idea to have both of them in November.
You can do that. Want me to?
Well, that's one of the, one thing about the diversification and your plan growing and having more managers is that there's always going to be somebody we're probably a little concerned with. Increases the odds anyway. So that's why I showed you the longer term stuff. And how are you doing? You know, 85% of the time, 5 years, stuff like that.
that's sort of our report card in a lot of ways.
Right, and you're evaluating the manager, so...
I've evaluated myself there too, I guess. I was really kind of just talking about the plan, but I guess in some ways that's what we get evaluated.
I don't believe you.
You don't want to, you don't want to get us a...
No.
Just a few.
I saw the minutes from the last meeting that Clinker was supposed to go to court and make...
Oh, he did. Yes, Mr. Clinker, was served his hearing papers. He was not very happy. He did not send a response like he was supposed to, because his attorney, quote, told him not to. And then he did not show up at the hearing. Now, you want the downside?
That's more.
We got, no. We got a default. Yep. Here's the problem. Well, no, we're not even there yet. Because apparently he now had, was it 60 or 90 days that Judge Ritterhoff Williams said, he owes you the money. Send him the paperwork. Now he's got to send in the paperwork. We might be able to accomplish a garnishment in a year. So, I thought, no. He has responses and everything else. And when I saw him at, that was right, what, May 15th or something like that? I saw him at the Westport graduation. And I looked at him and I said, did you forget something on Wednesday? And he had several choice words for me and what the city could do with various pieces of things and stuff and all. And I said, well, you better figure out about that paperwork.
Yeah, I think his first deadline on Judge Rearoff's order's already come and gone.
It was like 60 days or something. He had to fill out some kind of, it almost sounds like when you're getting divorced and they give you the financial,
right,
thing, something like that. So that was hurdle number one. But then the attorney just kept going, and then we do that. So when are we going to get some money? He goes, ah, well, who knows? So it's not over.
And right now we don't even know if he's got a job that would even be worth attempting to garnish his wages. Supposedly he's going back into the federal system in some capacity, from what we understand.
At the time we finally got him served, he was doing like a one-night-a-week jiu-jitsu class at a place out by Westport High School. Yeah.
So the saga continues.
Yeah,
so it's
at least we're taking action.
Yeah,
we have taken action, so. And we did get a default judgment against him, so that's on the court record.
And he's still paying interest, or the interest is still accruing and everything.
So.
Or was it, wait, maybe interest stopped the day we got the judgment. I think it stopped the day we got the judgment when it accrued up to that point. He told me so much stuff, it was like, really?
Instead of talking, just writing a check.
That would be nice.
Why, it probably won't work anyway. It'll bounce from here to...
We did arrest him for that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Never mind. That'd be fun, too.
As a police officer, we arrested him for that.
Police pension. Anybody got anything else? Anyone else?
You want to sell grass sand in Westwood next week?
15, 20 minutes each?
Yeah.
FPPTA is in October, and I think the 11th to the 14th, and the division of retirement is the early part of November. Anybody's interested, get with me.
I was interested in trying the one that y'all went to in the summer or spring, whatever that is.
Is that going to be the November one? But it's going to be a repeat.
Is the November one just a repeat of what y'all went through during the summer?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Unless there's something big and earth-shaking that's happened
every time I see the agenda, it's the same.
Isn't that the one we went to?
That's the one you and Mindy went to last night.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's no different, because I think there was no registration cost for that one down there in Orlando. And I'd like to go to one every year, but I don't have a problem going to that one if it doesn't cost the planet.
Fifteenth or sixteenth of November.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's almost done, John.
Is the state going back to twice a year now? Couldn't they come back to once a year?
Yes, they did. They are back.
They've got the fall conference.
As long as their attendance keep up, they said they'd continue.
So November, and when's the one in the spring, May?
Yes.
The end of May, first of June is what they're gonna do.
That's the one that I like going to because.
And they've changed it to, yeah, it's a Thursday, Friday now.
I don't know why they do that in November either. Every board meeting is in November. It's like the craziest, and they all try to get it in 3 weeks instead of four. And they schedule a conference. Well, if I try to go to one in November, we need to deal with that now?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'd be interested in November meeting.
That's when I said, I think it's around the 15th, 16th.
It is 15th.
Oh, that's that. When's our?
Oh, yeah, evening.
Our meeting is gonna be like what? 13th.
Yes.
Our meeting is the 13th.
Yeah.
13th, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Veterans Day is a Saturday.
So it's the 15th through the 18th.
All right, so does anybody else want to go?
I don't think I can go in November.
So we have a motion for Secretary Cuffey to attend?
I'll start moving.
Second.
Is that Doug and Brian?
We're supposed to go and try and go at least once a term, I guess, or once every 2 years.
Yeah, some type of training. I know y'all went through that training that was done down here in council chambers.
Yeah, the treatment or the, yeah.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I think November, is that the one that's held in Orlando, then the May?
Yes.
May's in Tallahassee.
I may try and go to the May one.
It's May, June, first week.
Yeah, first week of June.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to try to do something annually, or?
Once every 2 years.
Yeah, I did last year, and I did this thing up here.
What do I do?
Oh, wait, one more thing before I adjourn. Did everybody find it?
Yes.
File their financial disclosure statements. I'll do the lead there.
Yes.
Okay. All right, then I'll close the meeting. Time is now 3 p.m., 15 minutes.